FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's September 26, 2017. End of the quarter coming up. What will be ahead of us in October? Well, nobody knows that for sure, but things are interesting to say the least. And Danielle Park is with us. Oh, before I forget, email kl@kerrylutz.com. Danielle, how you doing?
I'm good, Kerry.
Hey, so you've been busy writing as usual.
Oh, writing every day. So today I was in the office at 5 to 6 this morning. So I keep thinking if I get in earlier, I will have more time.
I have a better
idea. I'm going to bed earlier and earlier at night now. You know, it's crazy.
You know, you'll be at the point where you just won't go home.
Well, hopefully not, because I do need some sleep. But it is you're constantly just trying to cover all the bases. But there's so much going on. That's part of it. You know, so much going on. We're late cycle on so many things. It's really getting exciting. But yeah, there's also a good deal of anxiety, because it's like, you know, you just know that the tipping point in many things is happening, and yet you never know for sure until after the fact. You know, if you ask me about when the market peaks and bottoms were for the last 25 years, I can tell you, of course, right off the top. Sure. But if you're trying to analyze it in real time, which is our job, to analyze and control for risk in real time, it is it's like, you know, never clear until, you know, you think you know, but you're never sure.
Yeah. And then when you look back in retrospect, oh, it was so obvious. Why? How could we miss that?
Oh, absolutely. And periods where you're out of favor, like where your discipline is not, you know, making you look real smart, those periods feel like forever when you're going through them. Yeah. But I also know from experience that when you look back after the fact, when, you know, all the things finally happened that you thought were happening, it feels like that period went really fast. So you know, it's a psychological test every single day. Markets are a psychological test about personal discipline. And I talk about this all the time. And thankfully, my experience with health and fitness over the years has really helped me in this, because I realized that it's just, you know, chipping away every day, doing the same thing and not losing your nut, like not making big errors. That's really what financial success is about over time. Right. And there's so many forces around us that are constantly trying to seduce us to the dark side, whether that be, you know, risk selling people, whether that be, you know, someone at a dinner party telling you about some hot stock they bought or shorted or who knows what, you know, or some property they flipped, you know, or some person trying to sell you on a seminar, you know, a get rich quick scheme. Mm-hmm. They're just constantly all around, and they drip away at you every day to see if they can get your goat.
Oh, God. Yeah. Hey, well, it just reminds me of a saying, things take much longer to happen than you ever thought possible, but then they happen much faster than you ever believed could happen.
Yeah. And you know, that Hemingway quote, you know, how did you go broke? Slowly. And then all of a sudden, that is literally what I think of when I look at this house of cards that the central banks of the world have literally, you know, enabled and built, encouraged in our financial system over the past 20 years. And it looks so like it'll never go the other way when it's inflating. And we've seen this twice before, right? And the problem with humans is the article I just put on, our behavior, our emotional cycle is exactly geared against us. So, you know, when things are crashing and valuations are finally coming back down to earth and yields are the highest they've been, most people have already been in and lost and are running for the fences. And if you tell them it's time to buy because things are really actually attractive, they'll look at you like you're insane. You know, that they really have a hard time because the media and the news is so universally dour that they're just convinced the world is falling apart. Yet, paradoxically, when you look at conditions today, because the central banks have been able to goose the cycle just long enough. Like, think back to 2010 and 11 when the world industrial capacity production started to turn down again, Carrie, and the markets were nowhere near where they'd been at the 2007-8 peak yet. And the central bank said, oh no, we can't let the cycle stall out here because that'll be a killer for, you know, optimism, faith, belief. It'll all go the way of the dodo bird. So we must find a way to reinflate it a while longer. And to their credit, they just kept going to those international meetings, the BIS in Europe. They kept saying, what are we going to do now, guys? What are we going to do now? And they would try another cycle of this, that, and the other thing. Each take turns, you know, speeches every other week. And they were able to really, you know, make the thing float for a little while longer, to the point where we're now at the most obscene valuations that we've ever had in equities and corporate debt, the most leverage. Valuations are the most obscene, even worse than the tech bubble peak in many ways. And yet this is when investor optimism is back at the highs that we have not seen since 2000. So there you go again. The buy and holders, as I say, you know, have been indoctrinated with buy and hold as the only approach you need to ever do. And they are now in full on belief and hope mode again.
Yeah, it is remarkable that people never learn from what happens in the past. Do you think we'll ever see a time, Danielle, again, where there's a average 5% dividend yield on stocks like in the S&P or in the Dow?
I do. And I think that we saw that for a brief time. We saw that certainly in the 02-03 bottom. We were able to buy things, you know, where the S&P had been yielding 2% at the peak. You know, you can buy it at the bottom. It's yielding closer to 4%. More importantly, various sectors, dividend yielding sectors that were yielding pathetically, you know, 3% like they are today, were yielding 6, 8, 9, 10% corporate debt. And the same thing happened in 2009, albeit for, you know, only about 6 months because it was such a sharp V bottom and lots of reflation quickly happened. But yeah, I do. I can't tell you, Carrie, if it's happening right now, although I think it might be, but it could happen, you know, it could take another year, two, three. I cannot say that with certainty, and that is difficult for some people. But one thing I am confident on is that mean reversion will happen. Value will be restored. Leverage will be wiped out. Bad debts will be written off again, a third time in the last 17 years. And we'll get yields that are suddenly 2 and 3 times what they presently offer. And mark my words, people will feel universally dour and negative when that opportunity presents.
Of course, because they've been burned. And what do? You've been burned. You don't go run back into the house that's on fire. You lick your wounds and wait for prices to go back up again until you go in again and repeat the process. So it's interesting. So the dividend yield, where is it now? It's like 2% or so. And you have like high quality stocks that were perceived high quality stocks. No one ever expected to pay dividends like Apple, right? Apple is just a growth stock, but all stocks make the transition from growth stock to mature industry, right? And eventually they wind up like Apple paying a dividend, even though they're a growth stock and didn't start out that way.
Yeah, but they also go through, you know, peak euphoria in that regard as well, where everybody thinks they can do no wrong, you know, and in the last two down cycles, that stock in particular lost about 70% of its value. So even though, and think about that, even though in 2008, we were all just kind of learning about iPads, you know, they were really just rolling out. That's when the stock still crashed with the overall market cycle to the lowest that it had been in, you know, a decade. And the Facebook's in trouble right now too because of the revenue model and all the problems that are going on there with, you know, the Russian fake news stuff. And so it's not a, you know, you have to discount, and it's difficult for people. They see a product and they either love or hate the product, and then they assume that means the stock is a good or a bad investment based on whether they love or hate the product. And what they forget is that markets are an auction, and the fundamentals of the company come and go, maybe, you know, are basically plodding along at a certain level. And then the stock market is like this insane opioid addiction that cycles up and down around that fundamental value. So you can't just look at products or fundamentals or balance sheets. You have to also look at where we are in the market behavior cycle. And that's the really important thing. And on that point, there's some really cool things like relative yields are everything, right? I'm actually writing about this in our client right. letter for the end of the month. But, mm-hmm. you know, in the old days, you think about the last two cycles, you know, government bonds were paying north of 5%, both in 2000 and in 2007, because we were in a more normalized yield curve environment, right? And everything else is supposed to be priced off that. So longer duration assets are supposed to pay more than shorter duration assets, and higher risk assets, higher capital risk assets that don't have maturity dates where they have to give you back principal, like stocks, equities, preferred shares, and they don't have a contractually prescribed rate of interest they have to pay you. They say they'll pay dividends, but that's always at the discretion of management and whether they had net earnings and all that good stuff. So those, you know, they're supposed to yield more than guaranteed contractually prescribed maturity dates and interest payments. And yet we're in a world where, you know, most of the bonds in the world that have defaulted the most, as an example, the countries in the world that have defaulted the most, have the worst credit record, yeah. are now trading with our price so high that they're yielding less than our government bonds were in 2007.
Yeah, they're so at par. it's amazing.
Yeah. Less. So, yeah. And you've got Germany with everything under 7 years trading with a negative yield. Because why? Because people are so actually, desperate for some kind of a guaranteed maturity date product. And the ones that have a value discipline don't want to buy these insanely priced equity assets or corporate debt assets. So they're trying to stay with issuers they think will give them back their money as the primary focus. And so in that case, they're literally paying a safe keeping fee. They're getting a negative yield to put money there. And anyone would say, well, that's crazy. You know, in North America, we've used low yields as a reason to spend our brains out, right? People say, well, why bother saving? Because you can borrow money for nothing and you get zero on your deposit. So why bother saving? But actually, the rational response to low yields is the opposite of that. The rational response is to say, wow, I have to save more until I can get a better yield, right? Because I'm trying to have a pot of money at the end that I need to use for a particular purpose, whether it's right. retirement, education, whatever the purpose is. And if I can't earn anything safe that's a decent yield, that means I have to save more money.
Yeah.
But we've turned that around and said, therefore, we have to risk more money. But that's because we have this whole industry that's paid to sell risk, right? Yeah, so they keep forcing or insisting that the answer is to risk more because that's how they get paid. When actually the answer is to save more and to control risk and to be ready, because liquidity is essential. If you're going to have a buying opportunity present, which you do every cycle, which we will again, and yields are going to be great, you can't have your money parked in the liquid things that are dropping from the sky. You have to have your money parked somewhere where you're going to be able to access it to do the buying when everyone else is selling.
Right.
And that takes forethought. You know, you when you're in a house and it's on fire, you need to get out of it, right? But there's things you can do to prepare for the inevitability of certain outcomes. And it's that preparation that people are very bad at doing generally. And that's what sets up opportunity for those of us who do have that discipline.
Yeah. So right now, where do you put your money? You just in T-bills or in the bank? What do you do?
Yes, mostly in T-bills, in provincially issued debt in Canada, mm-hmm. because they have access to a tax system, municipal and provincial.
Right.
It's a question of not getting suckered out the yield curve too far. I mean, places are issuing 100-year bonds today.
Yeah.
corporations are issuing, 40, 50, 100-year bonds.
Mm-hmm.
That duration, I mean, you can make money there. If rates continue to go down, you can make some capital gains on those issues, but it's for a period of time. And then you better have a rule to sell them as well, because that is a highly volatile product as well. Most people are not set up to own 100-year bonds. I mean, they're something you can trade if you have a rule set around them, but they're not something that you can typically hold till the yeah. end. There's going to be a lot of volatility. But the good news is that with the current yield curve, what's happening is it's flattening rapidly. So ever since the central banks in North America started to increase rates, to announce a taper, as your Fed did last week.
Right.
What's happening is they're all talking up the prospects of improving growth, and they're citing, you know, that as a rationale for why they need to start increasing rates. Meanwhile, the bond market is voting with its feet and saying, listen, you're going to invert the curve, because right. all you're doing is hiking short-term rates and slowing the economy that is already slow. And so you're getting a migration towards, you know, 10-year bonds and greater, because the bond market's saying prices are actually going to go up from here on those assets, while risk markets are likely to sell off. So there is opportunity to be had around, if you understand how to strategically use some of the bond market, you can do it in this type of a cycle. Like the U.S. Fed today, you know, is ridiculous. She's giving a speech, Janet Yellen, and she's saying, now, I think we've overestimated the employment numbers, and we've underestimated how hard it was going to be to get our inflation numbers up. Well, you know, memo earth to Janet, everybody knows that, you know, the bond market's been saying that for years now, that they're far overestimating the growth potential in this over indebted economy.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the real world, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, again, I don't know if they're willfully blind, or, you know, if they've, you know, if they're maniacally deceit, they actually are trying to sucker people in. I don't think that's it. I think that they're buying what they're selling in terms of their own philosophical belief system or something. I don't know, but it's nothing to do with what's happening in the real economy and markets.
Well, I'm sure they're very hopeful about the future, right?
Well, their optimism, actually, if you think about it, that chart I put on of retiree optimism, how it goes up with the stock prices, and how it's at an all-time peak right now, you know, very optimistic category, just went to a high not seen since 2000. That would be the central banks of the world as well. As long as asset prices are up, they're confident and optimistic. As soon as asset prices start to retreat, mean revert, that's when they start panicking and talking about what else they need to do to stimulate consumption. Unfortunately, you know, here we are, like we were saying at the beginning, at the peak of the last two cycles, they were sitting with overnight rates above 5%. Today, they're at overnight rates of 1%, and balance sheets heavily encumbered with assets they've already purchased. So they're in a very difficult position to try and offer any slack. And I think that's what's likely needed. And that's why I think we're going to get the third major mean reversion cycle. And this time, not a quick V. This time, a restoration of value and yields that'll be worth owning again. And as I say, I'm really excited about that. I'm just nervous for the people who aren't prepared, who are overly optimistic as the house is on fire, and who don't have a plan, you know, about what to do in response when everybody else starts selling in panic.
Yeah, which is most of the world here. Right. But that's the way the markets work.
I'm reminded of the scene in the Big Short where they're in the hotel in Vegas, and the young guys that have figured out the short are excited and jumping around. And the Brad Pitt character turns to them and says, "What are you doing?" And they say, "Well, we're excited. We can see we're going to make lots of money here." And he says, "Don't telecast that. Don't say that, because you're gloating when everyone else is going to lose. They're going to lose money. They're going to lose jobs. The economy's going to go into a recession."
I remember.
So it's like I always say to clients, listen, you're going to be at dinner parties where people are bragging to you about how much money they're making on a particular trade or asset or something. And yet if markets are crashing and they're losing their shirt and you've just bought low, it would be considered bad form for you to at a dinner party say, "Geez, you guys got wiped out. That's too bad. I was just buying, and this is like the best value we've been able to see in years, and I'm really excited." That would be considered bad form. But that unfortunately is the world that we live in.
Right. Well, yeah, it's pretty gauche. You don't go rubbing people's noses into failure, which is what comes down to. When you're losing money in the stock market or in the markets, you're failing. And that's what you have to come to terms with that. And the last thing you want is somebody so cheery and happy saying, "How I just cleaned up today. I just made a fortune selling everything short. Aren't I smart?" Well, that's not what you want to hear. Anyway, we got to wrap up, Danielle, but find Danielle's work, as always, at jugglingdynamite.com. Hey, send us an email, kl@carrielutz.com. Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Danielle, we will catch up with you again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.